Now, if you're an actor who wants to use her voice more effectively, or you want to talk like a girl from Galway, then you might very well end up working with Leif McPherson. She's one of Australia's best-known voice coaches, and she's a senior lecturer in theatre at the Victorian College of the Arts. And she's joining you and me from time to time to talk about the power of voice. Hi, Leif. Welcome to the show. When did you first realise that you had a knack for accents?
Oh, golly. I was a mimic as a kid.
Were you?
Yeah. I was always grabbing my favourite lines from my favourite shows and then performing them at the dinner table for my parents.
Such as? So,
well, The Young Ones featured at our dinner table. So I got to say some rude words to my parents because I was quoting people from The Young Ones.
Now, all right, well, they're English. I was thinking about this because those are English actors. Mm. And when English actors go to drama school, traditionally they get their accent of birth knocked out of them.
They have done. In the past,
yeah,
they
yeah,
have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was a sort of acting accent which everyone had to master or mistress.
Yeah.
What was the what was that accent?
So this was in the Aldi days, really, but and that has changed over my career. So I've been doing this about 22 years, and this tendency to erase your accent of origin has really changed within those 22 years in the UK. But everyone who went to drama school had to learn to talk posh, as it were, quote unquote. And so you would learn something which is an accent called received pronunciation. And that, if I start to talk to you in received pronunciation, it's what some people might identify as being what may be called standard British or BBC English. Some people refer to it as the Queen's English, but it's an accent that isn't from anywhere geographically, but certainly gives you an indication of social privilege to some people, and it was the accent which was considered stage standard. So unless you were doing something like Look Back in Anger or something that was specifically set in the East End or somewhere regional, your neutral, which is not my word but their word, your neutral accent for stage would be received pronunciation. So you would erase your, in Kenneth Branagh's case, Irish accent, learn RP, and that would become your accent of trade for your career. And because it was considered acceptable, you look at most of the actors of that generation and you wonder why they all sound very similar. It's because their own accent was not considered the one that would be their calling card through a career. So Ian McKellen is from Yorkshire, for example, but you wouldn't know that for the most part, listening to the way that he speaks. One of the things that is beguiling about the Australian accent to British people, and of course I'm generalising, but in my experience, was the fact that they couldn't peg you socially from the way that you spoke. Whereas in the UK, there is the opportunity to a certain extent to peg you socially as soon as you open your mouth.
Yes. Although I think we overstate that. It's true that there aren't clear class markers in Australia, not least because if you do come from, say, the middle class, you may actually play your accent down, especially if you're a man. You know, if I go into a hardware store in the country, I'll say, "G'day, mate, can I buy a hammer?"
Oh, I love it. Now we're starting to talk about code switching and code shifting.
Yeah, that's what I do. I code shift.
Yeah, code shift.
And or switch.
It's something that everybody does to a certain extent. We speak differently to our parents, for example, than we might to our peer group or the way that you or I might speak on
radio.
But
it is odd, isn't it, that Australians disguise class in the way they do? I mean, I would have thought in England people would the other way. Hello, my man. I'd like you to supply me with your final tema.
Well, that's been the pushback in a way. So there are accents that are emerging from the collision between received pronunciation, the accent that I was talking about a moment ago, and someone's actual own geographical origin. So you're getting accents that are now real blends of, I had a private school, what they call public school education, but I want to assert my place of origin. I feel attached to that. So you have people who are actually developing hybrid accents that usurp the notion that there is a way or play against the idea that social mobility is dependent on you identifying where you were educated. So it's a really interesting time where these accents are emerging that are deliberately pushing back against the old idea that the way that you spoke was a currency amongst people who spoke the the same way as you.
All right. Now, you're teaching actors in Australia. So a group of raw actors, wannabe actors, come in first year to the Victorian College of the Arts. Your job is not then to eradicate their accents and teach them the acceptable professional way for actors to speak, their sort of neutral position. Yeah. What do you then do with that group of first years? Do you listen to the way in which they talk and try to enhance what they have? What's the strategy?
I love this question. I'm going to love all of the questions, but I love this question because the thing that really does, I won't say offend, but hurt me or disappoint me is when people say, oh, you're like Henry Higgins. And, you know, when they know what I do and they say, oh, right, it's like My Fair Lady where you're trying to get everybody to sound posh.
Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. Why, if you spoke the way she does instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers too. A really old chap, he says. Yes.
I didn't expect such entertainment.
I know. I didn't expect it either. It just came out of the blue.
I love it. So
back to the question.
Back to the question. Mm. So what do I do? I don't judge people's accents. I don't consider one accent superior to another. My work and the work that we do at VCA is to give students the tools that they need to transform. So it doesn't matter where you've come from, your own story, your origin, who you are as a person is something that we actually want to develop within the student to find their own authentic voice.
So to transform, you mean to become somebody else?
Other. Your ability to shift and become the other, to empathise and then to tell the stories according to what the writer is after, what the text demands, what the director is aiming for, requires that you shift out of your own habits, out of your own ineffective or habitual way of expressing yourself and embrace otherness and extend yourself into the act of advocacy, transformation and acquired truth.
Now, I'm imagining that an actor would come into the class and they could have vocal characteristics that you'd say, now that's a problem, we're going to have to help you with that. And one that would certainly strike me is those sort of actors that you hear, or those sort of male speakers that you hear often among sportsmen who actually are not emotionally giving. So the blokes who say, yeah, no, we played well, mate. Congratulations to all the boys. The boys done really good. And next week's another game and we'll be there. We'll be coming to play next week. You know, don't you worry about that. We'll be on the field ready to play. And the boys have done good. Now, someone who talks like that, who we hear, you know, in the last minute of the news regularly, they're not emotionally available, it seems to me. They're just in a kind of safe place. So I talk like this, I'm saying, I'm not this kind of bloke. I'm just a regular guy.
Yeah, but what are you expecting of people in that situation? Are you expecting more emotion from them or hoping for more emotion?
Yeah, I'm expecting them not to be so defensive, not to have a kind of barrier up that says, yeah, don't ask me about my feelings or my ideas because I don't have any ideas, I don't have any feelings. I'm just, I'm just a guy. I think this is a bigger question about Australia, that there is a fear of being emotionally available among Australian men.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
And maybe those kind of guys aren't going to become actors anyway, but
it is interesting when I'm working with, I remember a student that I had when I taught at Whopper several years ago who was a farm boy, and that's not unusual to have someone who comes from a working background who has a passion for performance or theatre and hasn't grown up with people who are easily able to express their emotions and to be a little bit softer in terms of the way that they experience someone else's thoughts and story. And so you do sometimes hit I remember this particular student, and I was working on romantic, capital R, romantic poetry. And he said, well, I don't know what you expect of me. I'm just a sheep shearer's son. I don't know what you ask of me. I'm doing my best. And he just looked up, he'd Googled romantic poetry and chosen the first thing that came up and thought that he was incapable of bringing himself to the work. You know, he excluded himself from the opportunity to learn a different kind of perception of the world through, what was it? It was probably Wordsworth or Keats or Shelley or something. And I just worked with him on passion, on what makes you feel passionate? What actually excites you? What gets your breath going? What gets you feeling that the passion that you're feeling is so big you can't contain it? And it's actually so big that you might not find the right words to express it, but the words that you have are precious, that they become your footholds as you try and climb that mountain of expression. And to try and just get him to realize that passion is a substance that you can transfer from one place to another, but it's really the same kind of substance. And for him to bring his breath, his imagination, that question, what might it be like to love someone this much, to express it in this way? And for him, because he was a beautifully imaginative, open person who just had a bit of social conditioning saying, don't do that, don't be soft, don't go off and be an actor, that's not real work. And for him to allow himself to just be in a place where he had a sense of integrity because he was working on a craft rather than something ethereal, but he was actually working on his craft. And that gave him pride. That opened him up to the idea that he could be other than he was or other than other people defined him to be. And I remember that in his third year of training, he came in, we were doing Gerard Manley Hopkins, and he came in with the longest Gerard Manley Hopkins poem you've ever seen in your life and threw himself at it with such gusto and abandon and extraordinary colour and range that was unique because it came from his perspective, which was unlike any other student I'd ever worked with. And because he knew that I valued that rather than judged that, he allowed himself to be, to realize his potential with the work.
Mm.
He let himself meet it rather than keeping it at an arm's length.
The actor who's got that quality is Steve Bisley.
Steve Bisley's an amazing actor.
You know, astonishing force that doesn't come out of a privileged urban background, that comes off the farm and is totally expressive and strong and, you know, gentle when he needs to be, dangerous when he needs to be.
Sure.
Fabulous actor. How do people get the training to do the job you do?
I trained in London 22 years ago because there was no course of that caliber in Australia. And that was a very particular kind of training that I've been wanting to replicate ever since. It was extremely intensive, a full-time course that gave me the skills as a voice coach to head off into all different sorts of areas of the industry, to any area of the industry that I chose. And I've actually been working since then to try and bring that type of course to Australia. And so next year at VCA at Melbourne University, we're actually launching a master's in theatre focusing on voice so that I can train myself out of a job. I'm wanting to train the next generation and give the work that I currently get in film and television and stage to the next generation of vocal coaches.
Oh, this isn't a course for actors. This is for people who specifically want to be vocal coaches.
This is specifically for people who want to help others. Well, it can be for people who are working on their own voice because often actors need to be multi-skilled, but this is for people who have a passion in helping others, like me, in helping others to become better than they are at expressing themselves, or to help them transform if you're working with actors, or to work with lawyers or doctors, or politicians, anyone who has to express themselves for a living often needs the help of people who have expertise in this area. So I couldn't find the course that I experienced at Central, and that course as well has also changed. So I just decided to build it.
Good on you.
I'm building it.
At the VCA.
At the VCA at Melbourne University. It's going to be very exciting.
With Leith McPherson. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Leith is voice coach to the stars, and she'll be back soon for another encounter with the power of voice here on The Stage Show. And if you can't wait until then, you'll find some fantastic conversations and lessons with Leith on The Stage Show's podcast archive, including Leith doing her very best to get me to speak like a New Yorker. It's all about being assertive. I remember that. All about being assertive. You don't ask a question in a tentative way. You just say what you want. Give me a dog. Give me a hot dog. Something like that. Anyway, you'll hear my very best effort if you want to, if you go back into the podcast archive. There are lots of fun. This. Just subscribe to the Stage Show podcast on your favourite app or on the ABC Listen app, of course, and scroll back through the old episodes of our wonderful program. They're all there for you to listen to any time at all.